Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
President-elect Donald Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping spoke by phone today. President Xi congratulated Trump for his victory and said cooperation between the world's two biggest economies is the only correct choice for the future. State media in China reported that Xi told Trump there is opportunity and potential in the relationship. But during the campaign, Trump blasted China and threatened huge tariffs on Chinese imports. Stephen Nagy is an associate professor of politics and international studies at the International Christian University in Tokyo. He's with us on Skype. Professor, welcome back.
Thanks, Jeremy. Great to be back.
And first of all, what do you make of this phone call between these two? Our reporter in Shanghai, Rob Schmidt, says that when Trump told the Wall Street Journal on Saturday that he had spoken to all the world's major leaders except Xi, that it was a high-level public shaming and that face had been lost. Is that your view?
No, not at all. I think right now the Chinese government and President Xi is trying to assess what is the short, mid, and long-term implications of a President Trump. Based on his rhetoric during the campaign with Hillary Clinton, he has a very acerbic point of view about China, a very protectionist view of point of China, quite an aggressive point of view about China as being the root of problems for the United States. So in that conversation, President Xi had to figure out, you know, what's the best way to approach President-elect Trump, gauge what kind of president he may be, and see if there's an ability for President Trump to follow really, you know, the past 40 years of American foreign policy vis-a-vis China in terms of engaging China, trying to bring it into international institutions, trying to see if it can socialize it in terms of dealing with the international system. So I'm not surprised by this. And the contrast is Prime Minister Abe, who has already set up a meeting with President-elect Trump, who's going to meet President-elect Trump on the 17th and spend some quality time with President Trump trying to figure out what is Trump's position on the Japan-U.S. Military alliance and going forward in East Asia.
But what does it tell you that President Xi waited so long to call President-elect Trump?
Again, I think it's really a lack of understanding of what President Trump's position is on China. Was the process of being elected just rhetoric, or was that his real feelings? Is President-elect Trump going to actually slap a 25% tariff on Chinese products? This would definitely affect the Chinese economy. It would affect the bilateral relations at the economic level, but it would probably enhance a security dilemma between these two countries, which is very worrisome, not only for the region, but for the United States and China as well.
How do you think China would react if the U.S. took a tougher line, let's say, on currency manipulation?
Well, I think there's a couple areas that they can move forward. One is to look to regional partners and try to cement regional trade agreements. One is the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, which is RCEP. Basically, it's China, Japan, and Korea, plus the ASEAN states and a few others. This is a low-quality trade agreement, but it's in essence free trade for many countries in East Asia. The second potential approach is to push the Japan-China-Korea Free Trade Agreement. Again, these are agreements that are important for these countries, but I think important for the United States because they exclude the United States. It would mean that the United States are not part of the biggest trade agreements, the biggest free trade agreements that are going on at the moment. So these would be debilitating for the United States. They'd be a problem for the United States. And it means that the United States has less influence within the region. So China's approach is to look for how it can engage in economic relationships within the region, how it can expand its economic markets within the region. And one of those strategies is to use the One Belt, One Road. They can fund the One Belt, One Road with the Asian Infrastructure and Investment Bank. So China has a lot of options, but the United States also has some negotiating room as well.
But are Japan and Korea and other major countries in the region going to be open to that, to having closer ties with China, given everything else that's going on with the islands in the South China Sea and other disputes between the countries?
So this is an excellent question. I think what South Korea and Japan can do is that they can engage in a more deeper discussion, a more serious discussion with regards to the Japan-China-South Korea Free Trade Agreement or the RCEP Agreement to push the United States to get on board with the TPP or push the United States to get more engaged within the region. For South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, Philippines, and many countries in Southeast Asia, they see the United States as being a very important player that secures those countries' security within the region, while they at the same time engage in economic relationships with China. So the idea is that they actively engage in economic relationships with China, but they hedge their bets by engaging in security cooperation with the United States.
That's Stephen Nagy, an associate professor of politics and international studies at the International Christian University in Tokyo. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thanks as always.